Welcome to the Good Grief Conversation. I'm your host, Janet Jones, and you're listening to UK Health Radio. This programme brings you honest, gritty, emotional and inspiring conversation around a subject that affects all of us, yet is still very much taboo. So join me now for this inspiring Good Grief Conversation. Today's guest is Dr. David Hamilton. David is the author of over 10 books. One of them is You Can Heal Your Body, another, The Little Book of Kindness, and his most personal, I Heart Me, plus many more. He also appears in the award-winning movie Heal by Hay House. He is an international speaker on kindness and healing, and I am truly honoured to say that he's a very good friend of mine. Today was one of the most personal conversations I have had so far. This was recorded just before my son Murray's birthday. He would have been 23, and this program will first be heard on the 14th of July, the first anniversary of my son's passing. If you are listening to this on that day, I will be in Edinburgh, sat by my son's tree, socially distanced from friends and family, to celebrate with tears and laughter my son's life. David is a scientist, and his life changed when he discovered the power of the placebo effect and the power and resilience of the human body and mind. I wanted to talk to David about why my body physically hurt so much when we first lost Murray. I also wanted to talk to him about the law of attraction, because over the years, both David and I have found ourselves in the law of attraction world. Now, I believe in most of it. I do believe that how we are and how we think attracts certain things into our lives. But there are converts who would say that we attract literally everything into our lives, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Now, I don't fully buy into this, and David and I talk about life's complexities and how sometimes we can be thrown against a rock in the flow of life simply because we get caught in the rapids through no fault of our own. I'm sure you will love this conversation and get a lot of peace and understanding from it, just as I did. I'm so pleased to be able to bring this honest conversation with my friend David to you. Certainly, I never thought I would be talking to you about something like this, you know, given our background of our friendship and speaking and all that, you know.
It's funny, you just can't predict life. You can try and shape life in the way that you want it, but there's always things that you literally cannot predict. And then it really comes down to how you manage or how you live or adapt to life rather than, you know, being obsessed with creating life, so to speak.
I think you're right. I mean, what I've learned from this is that, you know, you read books like Eckhart Tolle, for instance, about the power of now, and an experience like this, it throws you right into now. You realize that is all you've got. It's certainly a strange time. And like you say, completely unpredictable. I was once speaking, a friend of mine's a doctor down in London. And, you know, we were talking about this. And, you know, we've done a lot of stuff about law of attraction and things. And you go, there's no way I attracted this into my life. And whatever happened to Murray, how he might have attracted it is one thing. But how have I? And we kind of deduce that life is complex. And things bash into one another.
Absolutely. You know, it's the one reason I've always had to not be so vocal and passionate about the law of attraction, because it's not an absolute, it's not quite as black and white as people think, because people are in horrendous situations that are very, very complex, like yourself, that there is no way you could possibly have had a hand in the creation. I've often used an analogy of being like on a little boat, a little canoe on a big wide river. And people who talk about the law of attraction, the idea is you can paddle to the left or you can paddle to the right. But what they don't realize is the river is moving. It has a current. And sometimes the current is going really, really fast. And it's not because you've attracted the current. It's just because that's where the current is at this particular point in time. And sometimes you're in the rapids. And it's unavoidable that you're going to smash into a dirty, great big rock, regardless of whether how strong you are and how much you can try to paddle to the left or the right. You're going to smack into that dirty, great big rock. And then the rest of the next phase of the river is, how do you recover from smacking into that dirty, great big rock? How do you put your boat back together or yourself back together until you reach a point in the river where the rapids have subsided and it's a gentle phase of the river? And then, only then, I think, are we able to use what people talk about, the law of attraction, this ability to set our goals and achieve our goals and paddle to the left or paddle to the right or stuff. But it becomes largely irrelevant, that idea of law of attraction, when you're in the rapids and you're literally going to a dirty, great big rock. And then I sometimes wonder that there was probably a reason why each person is born into a particular part of the river, where almost entirely likely that was that part of the river was, you were going to reach that at one part of your life. You know, and so life, like you say, it's incredibly complex, and we can't really simplify it down to, I set a goal and I'll attract it to myself. That is a gross oversimplification of the complexity of life.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Because, you know, as you know, before this happened, I was very goal-oriented, and I was, you know, designing the handbag, and I was well on track. It was all completed. I then had all my targets of what I was wanting to do, and I was so focused on that. But actually, I'd taken my focus off my son. And my son, who was doing something incredibly dangerous, he was very proud of what I was doing, you know. And then sometimes you think, well, at some point you've got to let your child go free and let them make their decisions. But I knew my son was doing something dangerous, but my mind was still focused because I'd been in the law of attraction world so long, and success oriented and all that kind of stuff. My mind was fully on that. I know you can't always, well, you can never go back and change anything. And at some point, you've got to stop your mind doing that.
The thing is, in saying that you took your mind off it, that's a perfectly natural thing to do, because no one could ever predict what's going to happen. You know, so there is no way that even that thought could have entered your mind. So at some point when you're a parent, as I know my parents have done for me, you have to let your children get on with what they're doing, and you trust,
because you just trust.
Yes. You can't possibly imagine what could happen, so you just trust that everything's okay. No matter what my children are doing, you trust that everything is okay. You know, I remember my mum once being a wee bit worried years ago. I went to India with a group, the Brahma Kumaris, World Spiritual University. I was invited to a conference over there. And I know my mum was really, really worried. I mean, she had to just trust that I'm going there. Now, I was kind of gung-ho about it, but we got into a bit of bother because we got into a taxi, myself and two women who were older than me, and one was a nun. And we got into this taxi, and the taxi driver came over, he ran over, he says, "Oh, Om Shanti," pretending he was from the Brahma Kumaris. And he said, "Oh, other airport is closed tonight. They're doing some work and it's not opening till 5 a.m. because we had to go to another airport to get the next phase. And the guy took us, he said, I'll take you to a nice hotel and you can stay there for a little while." We didn't really fully understand. So we ended up taking us to this ramshackle, disgusting place. And then he just left us there. And we realized the whole thing was a con. And the manager took us to this room, all three of us, to share the room. And the bed had urine stains on it, and he wanted $50 each. And we said, "Absolutely not." And he says, "Well, you're here." And he basically said, "You either pay me $50 or find your own way back." And we were sitting there nervous and trying to work out what to do. Very, very dangerous in the middle of a slum in Mumbai. I was already scared because I'm not very good with traveling to places. You know, despite my seeming confidence, sometimes if I travel a bit too far, I'm a bit kind of... And for about half an hour, we're sitting there feeling kind of just nervous. And I thought, I have to do something here because this is getting dangerous now. And I don't like the look of some of the things that are happening here. And I just jumped up and pretended I'd seen the police. And I went, ah, police, police. And I ran up, and the manager ran away. No, 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 no. And within a minute, he'd phoned a taxi. And we asked the taxi driver, take us to the Sheraton. And the taxi driver he phoned was obviously one of his friends, took us to the Sheraton. And as soon as we got out of the Sheraton, the guy at the Sheraton, we briefly told him, Porter, what had happened. And he then berated this guy about, what are you doing to India? We should be proud of our culture, not ripping tourists off, blah, 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 blah. And only then did we start to relax and realise the whole thing had just been a con. But it was very dangerous, because just 3 months later, one of the team of Brahma Kumaris was killed, was stabbed to death in a taxi on the exact same condition, suddenly realising it was a con and tried to get out, and the driver stabbed her and she died. And we were in a very similar situation. My mum could never have predicted that could have happened. Impossible. No matter what my mum's focus was, there is no way in a million years she could possibly have predicted that. And the same with yourself. You couldn't possibly predict the path that your children are on. You just got to trust what they're doing and know that they're okay. But knowing that you're okay, you can't ever absolutely know. But you don't think that, because it's certainly, it's complex.
It's complex. And like you were saying with the river and the rocks, you know, you don't know where those rocks are, and you don't know what moment you're going to be thrown into one, and you get thrown at them. If the rocks are that big, you don't get the chance to steer around them. You get thrown at them. And life does that to us, doesn't it, you know?
Absolutely, 100%. And then it sort of calls into question then so much of what, you know, I write about and other people write about and talk about in the whole self-help field. And a large part of focus is on creating the things that you want. And that is absolutely great when you're in a calm part of the river where there's no current and there's no rocks, which a lot of people are in a lot of the time. And that's all well and good. But I think sometimes life pretty much drags you to a point where you have to say, maybe the real power of living is learning how to deal with whatever happens, and how do I stay true to myself, centered, balanced, whatever. How do I get through? How do I live amid rocks and stuff like that? Maybe a lot of the focus that we have in life is just in the wrong way.
Maybe.
And we should really be focusing more about how to be at peace and learning how to find peace and joy in the moment.
It's an experience going through this. You know, when I was thrown up in that moment against the rock, I did go straight to gratitude, which was amazing. And I did think of other friends who had lost children younger than I had. And I just thought, well, I'm really grateful that I saw my son become a man. Now, that doesn't help. Well, it does help a little. But when you get in the dark place, I think that's at the point where you've got to just keep swimming and keep your head above that water until it does calm down.
And that's the only strategy available, isn't there?
I think so. And there are techniques to help you during that. Like, I've done a lot of yoga, and I've one of these podcasts, actually, a self-care one with my yoga teacher and a girl who did some EFT with me, you know, the tapping. And I found that helpful in those stress and anxious times. So there are little things that you can do to help yourself in that really strong current. But then I've realized just lately, as I was saying to you earlier, it's Murray's birthday at the weekend, and it's been tough. This week's been really tough. I just decided to surrender to it. You know, don't put pressure on yourself to have to go for a walk or have to do yoga. Just be. And I think it is, that comes back to that current again. Just be in it. Just swim.
Yeah, just swim, yeah. You know, it's probably one of the, I feel quite emotional just even talking to you, but it's one of the wisest things I've ever heard a person say. You know, sometimes in life you just got to swim.
Because there's no choice. You've just got to swim. But, you know, just coming back to the personal development stuff, it has certainly helped me. Knowing all of that beforehand, it has helped me during this journey. What I found, like right at the beginning, my body, it felt like it had been beaten, physically been beaten up. And I know we've just been talking metaphorically about that rock, but actually it felt quite real and solid. I notice, you know, in your book, I Heart Me. So this is from ages ago. Look, are you impressed? I love it. Don't you love it when somebody does that with your book?
Oh, it's so touching for an author. It's so meaningful because I don't see that very often. You know, you write a book and it goes out there and then I don't really know, rarely find out if people actually read it or enjoy it.
It's a strange experience. I get some people send me photographs of things that they've underlined in my book and you're like, oh, makes it worthwhile. So one of my stickers here is about the components of emotion. So I wanted to have a chat with you about, you know, why on earth did my body feel like it had been run over by a truck? You know, knowing what your background is as a scientist.
Yeah, because we always think of feeling or emotion as just that feeling, but you cannot disentangle an emotion, a feeling, from the corresponding impact on your body. It's like two of them are different aspects of the same thing. It's like, think of space and time. Prior to Einstein, we used to always think of space as one thing, time as another thing. But now, you know, you cannot separate them. They're two sides of the same thing. You move one and the other goes with it, kind of thing, complementary. And, you know, in a similar way, Einstein said that energy can't be created or destroyed. It just changes form. As we change in how we feel, there is a corresponding impact in the body. As we lighten a load, for example, then that energy changes in the body. As we feel an emotional weight, then that emotional weight is felt in the body. It's literally as we try and change, rock and roll and change how we feel here, it impacts the body. And so you can't disentangle how you feel from your brain chemistry, your nervous system, or the effect of on your muscles or the entire internal systems of the body. And that's why some research correlates the degree of releasing emotion with immune function. There's lots of research where a guy, James Pennebaker, and he's a professor of psychology. He pioneered the research into expressive writing, where you basically write for about 20 minutes on four consecutive days of something that's been an emotional trauma for you. You write for 4 days consecutively, just get it all out on paper. And what they found when they tested this in different ways is people's immune function shot up. One study, they even gave people an endotoxin, which is a safe part of a bacteria. It's a bacteria with the dangerous part cleaved off it. But you still get an immune response to it. And they found that the immune response, i.e. a measure of the health of the immune system, was massively, massively higher for those who'd done 4 days of expressive writing than those who hadn't. There's other correlations showing the degree to which, let's say, a person suppresses emotion in one particular personality type and the thickness of some tumours. It's why some research is looking at that correlation between weight of emotion and corresponding impact in the body and release of emotion, how the body literally goes with the mind. And so when a person experiences a significant heavy event, like an emotional crash, it can feel like they've been beaten up physically.
Oh, completely. And it's so heavy. I remember in the early days writing about the cloak of grief. It feels like it's made of lead, you know, it's just so heavy. And you can't just go, oh no, and I'll lift up, I'll walk tall, because this cloak is so heavy. But it's interesting you saying that about the immune system, because with feeling so tired and so drained, I ended up seeing my doctor and I just said, look, I'd really quite like a blood test. I want to know what is actually happening to me on the inside. And my immune system was fairly low. And that's when, you know, it's like, right, okay, I was talking to myself here, thinking, right, you've now got to get your nutrition back, because it seemed to hammer that side of me also, because you don't really care about what you eat. I was eating literally all the wrong things. Again, I've done one of these podcasts with a nutritionist talking about food and grief and what we do around that time and how we can help ourselves. But you can only help yourself once you start taking care of yourself again. And that's a tough one.
And it's learning to do that, because at the time you don't know to do that.
You're totally zoned out. You're zoned out of anything to do with living. You know, you're just gone. It's the only way I can explain. I did not feel part of life. I moved around. I live in the same house. My hair's the same color. I don't wear makeup anymore. But ultimately, I look the same to everyone else. But I'm not on the inside. It's all changed. But bits are starting to come back now, which is a bit of a relief. And so self-care, I've been able to take a little bit more of that. But it does take time. You know, it really does take time.
It's just swimming through it, holding on to the boat and the fragments of the boat after it hits a rock as it carries on through the rapids and gradually lightens. And all you can do is hold on to the fragments of the boat and keep swimming until you reach quieter waters.
And then you can start paying attention and doing different things. But that's really interesting on the releasing of emotion, because yesterday I actually had to cancel one of my guests. I have never done that. And I just felt I had to do that. I couldn't have done it yesterday afternoon. And so once I had, you know, released myself of the pressure of doing that, I cried so hard. Eventually, I fell asleep. But after speaking with you, then that is a release of emotion. So that was probably a healthy thing.
It was probably an exceptionally healthy thing for you to do. And sometimes you just know that the weight of your emotions in your mind is too heavy and it has to get out. And as you express that, the tears are your body finding a way out and it's coming out. And as you release it emotionally, the physical body is releasing it through your eyes and through the movement of your body is your body literally saying, I feel how you feel. This is my way of feeling it. And as you're releasing it emotionally, I'm releasing it in my own way as well.
And so it's being released, that energy is being released from the cells. So
yeah, literally from the cells.
So that has to be a healthy thing to do.
It has to be a healthy thing. I mean, all the research into releasing emotions shows a beneficial impact on health. Even research on forgiveness. I wrote a couple of chapters of some of my books on forgiveness, but in the iHeartMe book. And people who went through a forgiveness program, people who had lost loved ones to acts of terrorism, for example, in Northern Ireland years ago, even during the conflict in Sierra Leone, when people had lost loved ones to acts of terrorism, some of them went on a course called HOPE, and it was led by a professor at Stanford University. And as they went through that forgiveness program, learning how to release and forgive, many of the health parameters measured in the body and in other research shows an overall improvement in health, a change in depression. So depression lessens, positive emotion increases compared to what it was before. Immune function increases, cardiovascular health increases. There's a change in one, I think one research showed a change in ejection fraction of the heart. There's a physical effect change in blood flow to the heart. So there's a number of cardiovascular immunological effects simply through forgiveness. And forgiveness is just one version of releasing emotion, just like grief. They're similar in the sense that you're releasing an emotion. And so almost all of the research shows a positive gain to psychological health, but in particular to physical health at the same time.
Within grief, there is a lot of forgiveness required also, because, you know, from an outsider looking in, you literally just see the death of the loved one. But actually on the inside, there are layers and layers and layers of emotion. And it's not just the loss of that person. There are just layer upon layer. And within those layers, things require forgiveness. And I would imagine in just about all of them. And, you know, as I've discussed in other podcasts, grief isn't just about the death of a loved one. You know, it's in many things, losing your home, losing a job, a divorce. It's actually linked to any form of loss. And within that, forgiveness is required, even if it's forgiveness of yourself. If, you know, like for me, having to forgive myself for taking my eye off my son, you know, for doing that. So there's been a lot of that involved too.
Yeah. And it's all, it's every bit of release emotionally is accompanied by a physical release in the body. And people often use that analogy of peeling off layers of emotion, like layers of an onion. I remember, have you read the book The Journey by Brandon Baves?
No, I haven't actually. Oh,
she released 25 years worth of emotion. She had a basketball-sized tumour in her tummy and she released 25 years of emotion. She says it was like peeling off layers of an onion. But what was astonishing is with each layer of emotion that came out, the tumour began to shrink and it completely disappeared. Within a remarkably short period of time, this basketball-sized tumour disappeared in concert with her releasing all this emotion that she'd pushed down inside for years and years and years. It's a really great book called The Journey.
That's amazing. And I'll look into that because, in fact, I got another book recommended to me. I forget the author, but it's called something like your body keeps score. Have you heard of that one?
Yeah, your body keeps the score. I've read it, actually. A really, really good book. And it talks a lot about releasing trauma.
Right. Because I was also really conscious of that. When this happened, I was very conscious, knowing of the mind-body connection. So that's why I went straight to my mind. It's like, you've got to work this because this is what connects the body. And the last thing I want are some serious illnesses. Because again, I know that link. I've had that in my past. And, you know, it's like that can't happen again. I mean, you do talk about that in the I Heart Me with the components of emotion. So if we go a little bit deeper on that and how that actually happens, this mind and body, when you talk about autonomic nervous system, is that kind of where it starts, where your emotion is connected to your body?
It's certainly a big part of it. There's a couple of different ways that your emotions are connected to the body. So the autonomic nervous system is a balance between the sympathetic and the parasympathetic. And what that really means is, I'll give you a good example. If you were to breathe in and take your pulse, then you notice that your heart rate increases a little bit. And then when you breathe out, your heart rate decreases a little bit. And if you breathe in, your heart rate increases, you breathe out, your heart rate decreases. And what you're seeing here is a balance between two components of your autonomic nervous system. As you breathe in, your body's going to fight or flight. I'm getting ready. Your nervous system pulls your heart rate up, getting ready. And then you breathe out, your parasympathetic kicks in and that pushes your body into rest and relax. I can relax now. I get ready. I can relax now. And you see this balance as you breathe in, you see it like that. There's lots of, I've got a little heart monitor by HeartMath that you can track it on your phone and you can see it going up and down like that as you breathe. And what happens then, it's not just your breath, it's how you feel in the moment impacts that as well. When you feel anxious or worried or stressed, then there's more dominance of that part and less dominance of the rest and relax. So what you get, instead of this big healthy wave, you get it just about the top and it's like a wee jaggy line kind of thing. It goes up and down like that. And what you're seeing is a dominance of that bit. But as you release emotion, then what you get is a dominance of the rest and relax. So what you get is more activity of the portion of the nervous system that pulls your heart rate down, which is called the vagus nerve. And the vagus nerve is related to a person's experience of compassion and empathy and sympathy. And so you get an increased dominance, or increased ratio, if you like, of the rest and relax component. So as you release emotion, you have a physiological impact on the rhythms of the heart, and that affects then how much blood and oxygen is transported around the body. It also affects the size of the blood vessels. So when you're feeling fight and flight, there's a wee tiny wee constriction. When you're feeling rest and relaxed, the tiny little expansion, blood flow increases, kind of thing. So through your vagus nerve, that portion of the parasympathetic, you get an impact of how you feel in the moment through the nervous system impacting all over the body. But simultaneously, there's a chemical effect. And the chemical effect is a bit like, well, stress is one version, but a chemical effect. There's lots of neurochemicals called neuropeptides that are produced in concert with particular emotional states. So as we feel one emotional state, we produce a lot of it. As we feel another emotional state, those subside and we produce a different one. I've written a lot about compassion and kindness. So as we experience the emotion, the feelings of compassion or kindness, we generate, I call it the kindness hormone, oxytocin. And that's produced in the brain, but also in the body. So out with the nervous system, what happens then is these little neurochemicals, so neuropeptides, neurohormones, they on their own have physical impacts in the body. Like oxytocin, for example, the kindness hormone, causes a physical change to the tension in the walls of the arteries, releases the tension and causes a reduction in blood pressure. At the same time, it actually keeps the arteries and immune cells relatively clearer of things that cause damage in aging, like things called inflammation and oxidative stress, otherwise known as free radicals. And free radicals and inflammation often chew away at our cardiovascular system, also in the brain, and they're one of the factors that influence things like dementia. And also they chip away at the immune system. The kindness hormone acts like a little sweeping brush and it sweeps them all out.
So at times of trauma and stress, then there is a big risk of the tightening of the arteries and you know, all that physiology that is changing of all kinds of things physically happening within the body.
Yeah, but what I would say is we shouldn't worry too much of that happening, because the danger then is I need to get through this quickly so I don't damage my body. But in actual fact, your body's far more resilient than that. And it does take years for the effect to accumulate in any meaningful way. It can take years.
But that said, unless you, you know, see your trauma and start to work with it and handle it right from the beginning, then years could pass and then suddenly that illness is showing up and you wonder where that's come from. And actually it's come because right at the beginning you didn't face your trouble. You hid from it, sweep under the carpet or whatever people do.
Absolutely. I was meaning just about finding a balance, because there is a danger of feeling under pressure to get through this trauma quickly. And as you said, sometimes you've just got to swim. It's finding that balance when you're able to then deal with the trauma, but not too quickly. And the body is far more resilient than we think. We can cut it a wee bit of slack and thank it for being so resilient. And I promise you, when I'm through this, when I stop having to swim just to keep my head above the water, when I got into a little bit more quieter part of the river, I promise you, I will then deal with this trauma the best I can.
You're right, it is about timing and it's about really being connected to yourself and knowing what's right for you. Because there are times I think, right, come on, you know, get out of bed and do this and do that. And then there are days I go, no, stay in bed. And that's just how it is.
And obviously you're trusting yourself. It's such a hard one to know what to do, but it sounds that you've found a really good balance, and your knowledge and experience of these kind of tools has been invaluable as coping strategies, if you will.
Yeah, definitely. With some new ones added to it, you know, so there's everything that I did before. That's the stuff that kind of has me on those days when I think I can get out of bed and go walking or do yoga, whatever. That's when I use that. And then the added techniques, if you will, are just let it be. Just sit and be. It's okay. You know, it's okay if you don't feel great today. It's okay to have a cry day. A lot of people struggle with giving themselves permission for that because it's seen as weak. But I don't think that is weak. I think that's truth. One of the other things I remember you teaching when I saw you, well, I've seen you speaking several times, and you do the loving kindness meditation. I actually put, well, a version of that. I was reading it in your book today and I think, oh, my version's not like that version, but it's similar though. And I've turned to that very, very regularly.
I'm the same. I've turned to loving kindness often. I guess the more I've learned over the years about mind-body signs and particularly how kindness and compassion can be very healing, the more I've turned towards the loving kindness meditation rather than, say, mindfulness. Not instead of, you know, not meaning that one's better than the other, but at different times I've turned to that because it gives me more comfort. And I don't often use the version in iHeartMe. That was a generalized version. You know, the version I use is, may you be happy, may you be well, may you be safe, may you be at peace. And there's a million.
Oh, well, mine's similar then in that case. Mine's very similar.
Which
I like
one
that
do you
one.
Use?
I use, may I be happy, may I be safe, may I be healthy, peaceful and strong.
Brilliant. And that I love that because it's tailored towards what you need. And that's the beauty of the loving kindness meditation. There isn't just one type. There's a million variations and we can tailor a variation to what we need at that particular time.
Yeah, I guess if you're saying may I, you're asking for what you need. And happy and safe, I think, are pretty much top of the list. But what I also love about that, because, you know, in situations like this, there are the layers. So we were talking about, I love when you then start talking about other people within the loving kindness. It's not a self-centered meditation. It really does kind of spread out, doesn't it, right across the world and to absolutely everything. And it really does help you to see beyond your own struggle and be more kind and compassionate outside as well as inside. Because we need that whole thing. Kindness, it needs to flow from inside to outside to back to inside again. I mean, you're the kindness master, and here's me talking about kindness to you.
I'm not the kindness master. I'm just the person who's very good at writing about kindness. I'm at awe of the people who are out there on the ground in their daily life making a difference. That people often call me the kindness expert, the kindness guy, but I literally am in awe of all the people actually doing it on a day-to-day basis. I feel all I actually do is write about it and talk about it with the intention to inspire acts of kindness in others. Most of the kindnesses that you'll find yourself having the opportunity to do are silent little ones on a day-to-day basis. Just the way that you speak to the people around you, the way you treat the people around you, the little things that you do for everyone that largely go unnoticed, but they're so, so important. It's people's perception of me as the kindness guy, the guy who's out there doing all the kindnesses, and I'm not that person who's out doing all the kindnesses. There are people every day who I see and hear about who move me to tears with what they're actually doing on the ground. NHS staff, even people, delivery drivers or postmen, you know, people delivering your mail, people who are keeping the world going right now during the coronavirus pandemic. You know, I'm in awe of these people. You know, I've got friends who run charities. One friend, Jamie Thurston, who runs 52 Lives. And every week she changes the life of someone. She finds people who need help and she appeals through her database for, you know, bits of furniture, bits of carpet to fit someone's house out, for example, who's been left destitute, or donations for someone, like a little, or toys for a child who's going through cancer chemotherapy. And every week, 52 lives, 52 weeks a year, changes a life. And I look at people like Jamie and others and I think, wow, you are angels in human form. You know, I could only dream of aspiring to even close to that.
But then in a way, like you were saying, there are, again, different levels of what that kindness is. And it's a bit like, you know, donating to a charity. Your 50 pence is just as valuable as the £5 million because it's all going into that pot. So, I mean, in the early days of losing Murray, I knew I was very short-tempered. Well, I was rude to people and all that because, you know, I was broken. But it then came back to me. I just thought, oh, come on, you've now got to start looking. So as then I could then start seeing people, I could see the kindness that they were giving me and thinking, you must now give back with kindness. Slowly, those things were starting to come back. But all of that is just as valuable.
Funny, what you said there almost echoes. Now, I have a friend, Kim, who runs a small indie publishers company, and she helps people to get their books published independently, you know, self-published and stuff. And she lost her son, Callum, at, I think, 11 years old to meningitis. Right out of the blue, devastating. But what she's later written about and spoken about, she used to talk about happiness, actually.
Well, that's ironic, isn't it?
I'm seeing parallels now. I don't know why I haven't seen them until now. When I was writing my book, The Five Side Effects of Kindness, in its earlier version, Why Kindness is Good for You, I was appealing for stories of people who've experienced kindness. And Kim's was one of the first one that came in, and that's how I got to know Kim. And she said people, neighbours, she couldn't see the kindness at first, but all of a sudden she started to notice it. And neighbours, I think a neighbour left food or flowers on her doorstep. And somebody's a little card, just note, say, I know you're, another woman say, another little card, I know you're struggling right now, that hope this helps a little bit, kind of thing. And it was the kindness of strangers that was transformational. It helped her to see something that she hadn't seen before.
Yeah, I had a couple of experiences. Well, there's a tree in Edinburgh for Murray. In the early stages, it was at Arthur's Seat where he fell. And I was sat there by the tree just a few weeks after losing Murray. And it was all adorned with notes from his friends and everything. It was such a beautiful thing to do. And this guy walked up and he said, oh, you know, so what's this then? And I explained, you know, what happened with my son and this was this tree. And he reached into his pocket and he just pulled out a little book that he'd done himself. So it's a, you know, a self-published book, just of little anecdotes of joys and pains of his life. And he handed it to me, signed it and stuff. And then where I opened it up, there was a quote. It was along the lines of, God will never give you anything more than you can handle.
And I was like, oh my God, this is the universe at work, because I was struggling. And there's this man who just happened to cross my path. And with his kindness, he reached me. I was blown away.
I'll tell you, this wasn't expected today.
Yeah, I know. Here we go again.
They're healing, though. They're healing.
More tears. I told you, I've had a teary week.
You know, it's funny, but you're actually healing me in some ways. I've had a very challenging last month, just feeling constantly overwhelmed with work volume. You know, so many talks. It started round about Mental Health Awareness Week, funnily enough, where I was overwhelmed with the number of talks I was giving and interviews I was doing and podcasts. But with all of the a lot of talks were corporate talks, and with each one goes several hours of other work, you know, pre-work and after work. And then I had a physics exam to study for and a book to write. And the physics exam was 2 days ago. I'm half the way through an open university degree in mathematics and physics. And it was quite a tough exam. And I didn't leave myself as much time to study as I would like. You know, yesterday was my first day off in 2 months. Actual day, I'm talking weekends as well. It was my first full day off in 2 months. And it was almost like I needed a wee release today. So thank you. But I almost like my body was feeling it. And I got up this morning and I thought, I've got 3 magazine columns to write over the next couple of days, all of which are overdue because I just haven't had the time nor the headspace. I've not had, it's not just about time, it's having the mental space. Now, what I've dealing with is a tiny fraction of what you've went through. I can't even begin to imagine that. But I'm really just saying this because I know a lot of people can relate that we have our little mini traumas and challenges all the time. And sometimes the best thing you could do is have a wee cry about it. Even if your own little trauma seems insignificant.
It is.
It's still yours. And yeah. you need to get it out. It's better out than in.
Absolutely. It doesn't have to be a big, massive rock that you hit. You know, there's little pebbles in that stream can hurt as well.
They hurt as well and they leave a bruise, you know, and sometimes that, yeah, that, exactly that.
Yeah, they need dealing with. You have, however, just reminded me, I also have a column to write and my deadline is the 15th of June. I haven't done anything about it.
Well, I'm the same.
I know what I'll be doing this afternoon.
You know, I knew that I had emails from editors. I mean, I'm talking lovely, lovely people. It is a beautiful job.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful job to have. This is not a complaint.
No, it's not. And it's not like what you imagine editors in decades ago cracking the whip. These are lovely people who send them those beautiful, polite emails. Hi, Dave, just wonder how you get really, really sweet, lovely human beings who are in the jobs that they should be in because they're really nice. But I almost didn't want to open them because I knew that it was a reminder of the deadline.
Yeah. Yeah, no matter how nice it is, the message is still the same.
Yeah, it's just a reminder. It's a gentle reminder, which you have to do. But I thought, oh, no, I'm going to have to get up this morning. And I know I've got like 2 or 3 emails like that that'll have to be dealt with immediately because I'm overdue by a week for all 3 columns. And but a lot, I'm talking lovely, lovely, sweet emails. But as I say, we all have our little mini stones and pebbles. And it's very, very important to get that out of your system, to release it. And it's funny, during Mental Health Awareness Week, I became profoundly aware that in the majority of the online talks I was giving, you know, every other day on either Zoom or WebEx platforms or Microsoft Teams or Google, whatever the group, charity or company were using. And I found myself repeating the same message, talking about the health benefits of kindness, but also doing a section on kindness to yourself and what it means. And afterwards, towards the end of the week, realizing I've not been showing any kindness to myself because I literally feel overwhelmed. I don't have the headspace for anything. I'm literally completely swamped and overwhelmed by the volume of things I'm having to do right now. And that's why, as I say, yesterday was my first actual day off in 2 months.
And you got to, practice what you preach, David.
And I was
self-kindness is really crucial.
I know. Well, that's why I've decided that, you know, this is the only thing, us having this conversation, is the only thing other than the columns that I was going to do the whole week. I thought, I'm having an easy week. And this, for me, I was looking forward to just chatting with you today because you're one of my friends. And so I wouldn't have scheduled any.
Yeah, this isn't like a podcast.
No, but you know what I mean? I wouldn't have scheduled an interview this week because I knew I needed the time off. But I was looking forward to chatting to you because I always feel good when I talk to you. We've been friends for years, and I knew that you'd probably make me feel good as well as me trying to help you, and just something about conversing.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win anyway.
Marvellous. David, we've come to the end of our time. We have. But brilliant. And you and I can carry on talking. So sorry, everybody. But so that's the end of the time for this podcast. But as always, wonderful chatting with you. And thank you in your week where you're taking some downtime for coming to join me on the Good Grief Conversation. So thanks a lot, Dave.
Well, thank you, Janet. It's been my absolute 1,000,000% pleasure. Thank you.
What a lovely conversation. I got so much out of that myself, and I really hope that you did too. It kind of went all over the place, didn't it? But he's so intelligent. He's got so much information and such a big heart that it was great to get all that knowledge from him, and I very much appreciate it. Now, as always, I asked my guests for a gift for you guys, and David has very generously offered one of his kindness courses. And so in the podcast extras, you'll be able to sign up to his course. It's actually all within the podcast extras, so you don't need to sign up to anything else. It will all be there. And he gives that usually to like big companies and things. So we're really privileged. Come and sign up for those podcast extras. It really is getting amazing inside of there now. We've had such incredible guests who have been so generous. So there's all kinds of things in there, from videos, meditations, PDFs where you do like workbooks, and now, you know, David's full course for his kindness. So come along and join us at Podcast Extras. Don't forget, if you would like to support this conversation and keep us on air, then you will be offered the opportunity to support us either for the price of a paperback or the price of a hardback. You just take a look and decide which one would be right for you. And of course, because this information is so valuable, then I don't want money to stand in the way. People did that for me, where they gave things to me, so I would like to do the same thing too. If you are really struggling and you need access to this, there is always the free option. But of course, you know, like everybody, we need a little bit of support here at the Good Grief Conversation. If you would like to find out more about David, then his website is Dr., which is just Dr., DavidHamilton.com. So that's DrDavidHamilton.com. And there you can find out more. There's all links to his social media, so you can just click on those and connect with him on social media. Now, next week, my guest is the intriguing Alan Kleinhans. He has had an epic journey of losses, from killing people as a soldier to watching friends die in his arms. And years later, he was set on a new path by Tony Robbins, and Alan became an international motivation speaker who has changed many people's lives with his awakening to a joyful and peaceful life. He's certainly a great support for me when I'm struggling. I get little messages from him. It makes such a great difference. So I'm sure you will enjoy this conversation. In fact, it was such a big conversation that we had to record it in two parts. So hopefully you'll be tuning in with us for the next couple of weeks and you'll listen to the whole of Alan's story. It's truly enlightening. So I hope you will enjoy me for that conversation and be inspired for a better life. I am Janet Jones. I'm your host here on The Good Grief Conversation, which is aired on UK Health Radio. This has been such a pleasure talking with you today. If you would like to join our community, don't forget, just head over to thegoodgriefconversation.com and register for those amazing podcast extras. You'll get to know all my guests a little bit more. And you can also join me on social media. I'm at facebook.com/thegoodgriefconversation and the same at Instagram. So that's instagram.com/thegoodgriefconversation. It will be great to get to know you better. Until next week, be safe, be at peace. In fact, just be. I will speak to you soon. You take care now.